Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. New details tonight about the tragic fatal shooting on the set of the Alec Baldwin movie Rust. Various eyewitness accounts from the Santa Fe, New Mexico set have now been made public. In a search warrant application put out by the Santa Fe Sheriff's Office, the detective on the scene reported that the movie's assistant director clearly indicated that the gun was, quote, cold as he handed it over to Baldwin. Detective Joel Cano wrote that, quote, during the filming of the movie, the assistant director, Dave Halls, grabbed one of the three prop guns that was set up by the person in charge of the guns, known as the armorer, Hannah Gutierrez, which was on a cart. The detective learned one of the prop guns was then grabbed by the assistant director, who took it to Baldwin. As the assistant director handed the gun to Baldwin, he yelled, "Cold gun," indicating the prop gun did not have any live rounds. Now, that account was backed up by the wounded director, Joel Souza. Souza told the detective, quote, it was his belief the gun being used in the rehearsal was safe and used the term cold gun when explaining the firearm safety announcements. Every indication from that set points to the conclusion that Alec Baldwin had good reason to believe that the firearm he was handling was not live. If those accounts hold up, chances are he will not be held criminally responsible for the act of pulling the trigger. But that does not mean he is in the legal clear. What happened leading up to that moment, or Baldwin and others involved in the production, how did they allow this to happen? Some crew had reportedly just quit, in part over safety concerns. And there are questions about that assistant director and his safety record on previous productions. A prop maker who worked with Dave Halls on a 2019 TV series accused him of being negligent. Quote, he did not maintain a safe working environment. The prop maker Maggie Goal told NBC in a statement, safety meetings were non-existent. The only reason the crew was made aware of a weapon's presence was because the assistant prop master demanded Dave acknowledge and announce the situation each day. And just breaking tonight, CNN now reporting that Halls was fired from the movie Freedom's Path because a gun, quote, unexpectedly discharged on set. And there was armorer Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Now, she was in charge of the firearms on the set. 24-year-old, daughter of a longtime Hollywood armorist, Fel Reed. And not only did she have limited experience, some of her public comments from September hardly inspired confidence. Listen to how she talked about one aspect of her job that struck her as particularly frightening. Now, of course, those remarks call into question whether she should have been the armorist on this production at all. And this wasn't the only incident involving the firing of a live gun on the Rust set. According to the LA Times, 5 days before the Baldwin incident, the actor's stunt double fired two live rounds after also being told the gun was cold. So where do we stand legally? It seems Alec Baldwin likely won't be held criminally responsible for the act of pulling the trigger, but Baldwin is also a producer on the movie. And in that capacity, there are questions about whether he was negligent, maybe even criminally negligent. That's the key word here, negligence. Someone has to have violated a duty of care. Now, that's typically a word used in civil cases with money damages. But in the state of New Mexico, you can be convicted of involuntary manslaughter for an action, quote, in the commission of a lawful act which might produce death in an unlawful manner or without due caution and circumspection. There is no logical explanation for how a live gun ended up in Alec Baldwin's hands. But who exactly was responsible? Did the producers have knowledge of the problems with safety on the set? Were there protocol issues? Bottom line, there could still be several people charged in connection with this tragedy. Joining us now is Cynthia Armijo. She's practiced law in New Mexico for more than 20 years. She worked as both a prosecutor and a defense attorney. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it. So the reason I specifically wanted you on the show today, unlike a legal analyst like me or somebody else out there, is you know New Mexico law. You know the people who are investigating this. Where do we go from here in terms of this investigation? And how likely do you think it is that someone, one of the producers, the directors, would be charged with a crime in connection with what's happened here?
So, yes, in this jurisdiction, our prosecutor tends to be very fair. She tends to look at all sides of the issue. And she's relatively new, too, so she will have some issues in dealing with what the appropriate resolution to this case is. I certainly see liability civilly, if not criminally, for this case, just based on the fact, as you said, ultimately the question is going to be what Alec Baldwin knew about the people he was hiring.
Right. Let me ask you a question. I said to someone earlier today that the best thing Alec Baldwin could do is just the opposite of what we see in most criminal investigations, and that is cooperate, meaning help them as much as he possibly can in putting the pieces together. Now, typically, in an investigation like this, a criminal defense lawyer like yourself might say to him, hey, be careful here. Don't speak. Do you agree with me on that?
I completely agree with you on that. I think the worst thing that he could possibly do is to speak. We know that for sure with Hanna Gutierrez, that she is giving statements and her past statements are coming to haunt her. And certainly they're not only haunting her, they're haunting Alec Baldwin, the producer. So these are things that Alec Baldwin, I understand that he wants to help with the case and he really wants to help with the family. But I'd be willing to say that a criminal defense attorney says it's not a good idea to speak publicly, certainly not to law enforcement.
Wait, Cynthia, I'm saying just the opposite. I'm saying that I think the best thing he could do right now is the opposite of what would happen in a typical case. I'm saying that I think that the best way he could avoid charges here, and again, you can disagree with me on this, but I think the best way that he and others on this production could avoid charges is to cooperate as much as possible, to explain exactly how things happened. I think if he starts saying, look, I'm not gonna talk, my lawyers advised me not to help, I think if that happens, you are inevitably going to see criminal charges here. You disagree with me?
I do, only because I'm a criminal defense attorney, and the reaction generally by a criminal defense attorney is do not cooperate. The reason why is because things that you say can be misconstrued. Alec Baldwin's involvement in this case is, you know, as far as lack of mens rea or criminal intent, that certainly helps him. But it's always dangerous to tell your client to cooperate with police because you never know.
I think we got a bad connection.
What might come out. So. And this prosecutor, like I said, she's very fair. I expect her to do the right thing in this case, but a lot of it will depend on what evidence comes.
All right. Cynthia Armijo, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I mean, this is a New Mexico case, and there are specific laws and rules, et cetera, that apply. And that's why it's so good to have your insight there from New Mexico. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, the set of Rust is not the first time someone has been inexplicably killed on a film set. In 2015, a young camera assistant was killed. Numerous people were criminally charged. That case could tell us a lot about what could happen here. Coming up next. Welcome back. As we continue our coverage of the Alec Baldwin shooting, we're just getting in a statement from the producer of a movie where the same assistant director who had worked on this movie, remember, this is the assistant director who apparently said that the gun was cold, was fired on a movie in 2019. The producer of that movie confirming that Dave Halls was fired from the set of Freedom's Path in 2019 after a crew member incurred a minor and temporary injury when a gun was unexpectedly discharged. Halls was removed from the set immediately after the prop gun discharge. Production did not resume filming until he was off the site, and an incident report was taken and filed at that time. Now, that is very bad news for the folks on this movie. Because as everyone tries to figure out how a live round ended up in a gun on the movie set of Rust, and we're waiting on any potential criminal charges, there is a 2015 case that has to haunt many of the top execs on this film. It happened on the set of Midnight Rider, a never-finished movie about the life of Southern rock pioneer Greg Allman, starring William Hurt. Director Randall Miller served a year in jail after camera assistant Sarah Jones was hit and killed by a train as it crossed a bridge while the crew was filming in Southeast Georgia in 2014. Seven others were injured. Video from the set shows Hurt and the crew scrambling to get off a trestle bridge as a train approached. The CSX Transportation, on the train, said they twice denied the crew permission to shoot on the tracks. Miller took a plea deal just as the trial was set to begin and was sentenced to a total of 10 years, including 2 years in jail with the rest on probation. He ultimately served just over a year, had to pay a $20,000 fine, and complete 360 hours of community service. The term of his probation prevented him from directing, serving as a first assistant director, or supervising a film crew. As part of Miller's plea deal, charges were dismissed against his wife and producer Jody Savin. Now, producer Jay Sedrish pled, allowing him to be sentenced without admitting guilt. He was sentenced to 10 years probation, banned from serving as a director, first or second assistant director, or a crew supervisor, also fined $10,000. First assistant director Hillary Schwartz was convicted of involuntary manslaughter and criminal trespass and sentenced to 10 years probation and a $5,000 fine. This is serious stuff. William Hurt later told the Canadian Press News Agency, "I just had an unsettled feeling from the very time I got there. I stopped everything and I said in front of everybody, I said, stop. And I asked assistant director Hillary Schwartz in front of the whole crowd, are we safe? Because it's her job, the first AD, to tell us that. She said, yes." Now, while CSX said they did not grant permission for the crew to film on the tracks, Jones's parents won a civil suit against the company. They also spoke about the tragedy after the decision.
How did that unfold? How in the world could a camera assistant be placed in danger?
Went through this trial to find out what happened and why it happened and what led up to it. The money, was it about the money?
After their daughter's death, Jones's parents began the nonprofit Safety for Sarah, aimed at raising safety awareness and accountability on movie sets. Joining me now is Justin Sylvester, host of E! News Daily Pop, who covered this story extensively. Thanks a lot for coming on the program. Appreciate it. All right, so many seem to have already forgotten this case and the fallout. Remind us of how they ended up shooting on the tracks in 2015 and what went wrong.
You know, the problem was the director wanted that live shot. He wanted it to feel real. He wanted it to feel intense. And they tried at two attempts to get that shot, but trains kept on coming. And it was at that third moment where he put them back at risk to get that one shot. And it ended fatally. Fatally for her, there were other people who sustained serious injuries. And you have to look at, you know, at the time we were in 2015, people were afraid to get blacklisted in Hollywood. So if you're a camera assistant who spoke out about not feeling safe, you were being sent home and no one was going to hear from you again. But it's 2021 now. People can't get away with this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And when looking back at that case, you know, there were a lot of criminal charges, though, that were brought. That, you know, look, and this is a very different situation with the Alec Baldwin situation than that one. But the fundamental issue with regard to all of the criminal cases that were brought was you created an environment that was unsafe. No one was saying they did it on purpose.
Oh, 100%. And if you go back to 1993, when Brandon Lee died on the set of The Crow, there were no criminal charges put on anyone. The DA said they couldn't find any criminal wrongdoing. Fast forward to 2015, and you have the legal system saying, no, no, Hollywood is no longer a self-regulating place. Someone has to pay for this. The issue comes in, yes, as an actor, Alec Baldwin is probably not going to be charged with anything criminally. But when you become a producer and you put your name in that credit, it changes the whole game. That's why actors have to be really careful when they ask in negotiations, oh, I want to do this because I see this other person becoming an executive producer. You better make sure you know exactly what you're getting yourself into because his name could be on that docket.
Right. And in the Hillary Schwartz case, and she was one of the people who was charged here, she actually went to trial and I think was hoping that the judge, the court would understand that, you know, sort of it wasn't her fault, so to speak, was kind of her defense was, you know, don't just blame me here. But in the end, you know, she was convicted. And while she didn't have to serve any time, has been continuing for the last 7 years to try to fight against the sentence that was issued.
Well, of course, but the first AD, the first priority in their job is to make sure that safety is on point. And you hear the accounts of people asking her, are we safe? Should we do this? You have to really, really read the fine print when you take these jobs. And the other thing is, no matter what happens, if Alec Baldwin walks away from this as an innocent man and they say there's no criminal wrongdoing, this will live with him personally, professionally, emotionally. You don't get over something like this. This could be his Hollywood legacy.
Yep. And look, and I will say that again, I think that this 2015 case is the most underappreciated thing as people are talking about the Alec Baldwin case. And people are saying, well, you know, did he pull the trigger? What did he know? Et cetera. It's exactly what you said, Justin, which is when you're a producer, there are obligations that come with that. And if he was partially responsible, for example, for cost cutting and safety got cut in the process, that could actually not just be a civil. That could be a potential criminal charge here. Real quick.
Oh, for sure. And then you also have to think about, I mean, look, we're living in 2021. They brought Tupac back from, you know, the dead to perform at Coachella. How are we not figuring out that CGI and computers can do the same thing for gunshots? Mayor of Easttown, a cop drama about killings, did the same thing 3 years ago. You have ABC banning, you know, real gunfire and ammunition on sets.
Justin, in Mayor of Easttown, they didn't use any... Oh, I didn't know that. And I watched that.
Every gunshot in Mayor of Easttown was digitally done, and it's a show about a cop. So if they can do it on HBO, so can you.
All right. I just learned something. Justin Sylvester, thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Coming up, shocking allegations surrounding a major university, claims from young women who say they were shamed into staying silent about rape and sex assaults until now. Welcome back. Can we all agree there are certain issues in the news that impact almost all of us? Gas prices surged to record highs, with regular unleaded now averaging $3.38 nationally, and with much higher prices in certain areas. Across the globe, products like toys, shoes, cars are stranded on shipping containers, boats, trains, and trucks. Right now, a record 100 ships floating off ports just in Southern California. Now, I'll admit, the global supply chain crisis is an issue I had not thought about until recently. From the pandemic lockdowns, followed by a burst of demand once things opened up, with other factors including labor shortages and extreme weather, some ships have been forced to wait up to a month to unload their goods. Americans paying a major price. Higher prices for a number of basic things American families need, like diapers and clothes, new cars, meat, eggs. Now, what if I told you that the pain is in part thanks to Russian hackers? Oh, I get it. No one wants to talk about Russian hackers. To Republicans, it sounds like the failed effort to oust Donald Trump. And to Democrats, it's a reminder of, well, the failed effort to oust Donald Trump. So now it seems nobody can look beyond that and highlight that a Russian state-sponsored hacker group has launched another cyber attack. They're called Nubelium. Microsoft calling out the Russians in a blog post yesterday. Microsoft wrote that it told 609 customers that they'd been attacked 22,868 times by Nubelium between July 1st and October 19th. Now, the Biden administration in April punished Moscow for a previous hack on SolarWinds with some financial sanctions and diplomatic expulsions, but President Biden held back on doing more, saying he wanted to calm tensions. Obviously, the call to tone down the conflict doesn't appear to have deterred Russia. And during the president's speech today, for example, he didn't even mention Russia in the hack. Is he afraid? Does he think it's not important enough? Or is it just that most Americans in both parties just cringe when they hear the word Russian hackers? If so, that means we all lose and Russia wins. Joining me now is Robert McMillan, a reporter for The Wall Street Journal who covers computer security and hackers. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. All right, so first of all, talk to us about the impact of this current hack.
Well, this current hack, and it pains me to say this, by the standard of all hacks, is actually not the worst thing that I've been writing about over the last year. This is what, you know, basically low-level kind of trying to guess people's passwords, sending them emails, getting into their accounts. It's widespread, and it's interesting that it's actually seems to be something that the Russians are doing more than they were doing, say, a year ago. But in the grand scheme of things, this isn't another SolarWinds.
All right. So what do we need to try to prevent the Russians from continuing to do this? I mean, obviously, what the Biden administration did didn't work, right? It's not deterring them. You're making it clear they're continuing to attack us. What are the options here?
Well, I think it's helpful to think about the different problems that we're facing when it comes to Russian hackers. I think problem number one, really, is the ransomware epidemic. And this is software that basically stops companies from working. It's threatened our supply chain. It's been very damaging to the United States. And that's largely done by criminals with the tacit support of the Russian government. So that's the thing that really we should be putting pressure on. And there are a variety of things the United States could be doing, from squeezing the financial institutions that these criminals are using to cash out the millions, the hundreds of millions of dollars they're making from ransomware, to just disrupting their servers and making it harder for them to operate. And we're starting to see signs of that happening. But I agree with you. This is a problem that it's proven to be very difficult to address head on.
Well, do you agree with me that the reason people don't want to talk about this is because no one wants to hear? It's funny, when I talked about doing the segment, when I talked to someone about it, they said, oh, Russian hacking. No one wants to talk about Russian hacking. I'm like, I get it. I know. The Democrats don't want to talk about it. The Republicans don't want to talk about it. But if no one talks about it, then the Russians win.
Well, the problem is that it's actually that what are the pressure points and where can anyone really stop this from happening? So you've got that on the one side. And then you've got this bizarre situation where the idea of Russians hacking the United States has somehow been politicized. And you know, look, I can explain digital certificates and Kerberos authentication, but why that has happened is a little out of my pay grade.
Right. Understood. But do you, like, as someone who covers this stuff, right, and you're pitching to your editors stories, do you get responses sometimes, which is an eye roll? Oh, not another Russian hacking story?
No. I mean, ever since the Colonial Pipeline was hit and, you know, people were standing in the streets trying to get gasoline because of hacking. Yeah. I think that for the Wall Street Journal's readership, this is a really important topic. We write stories about Russian hackers, and they get very well read. There's lots of discussion amongst our readership about these stories. I mean, people care about it. At the political level, I do think it comes down to this bizarre politicization and the fact that it's such an intractable problem, or it appears to be.
Right. And I should clarify that when I say that really people don't seem to care about it, it's really cable news that I'm saying doesn't care about it, because it's fair to say that you guys have been covering this, you've been staying on it, and I agree with you that this is really, you know, this is really important stuff that can shut down the United States in many ways. Robert McMillan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.